Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Richard Bampfield. How are you, Richard?
I'm pretty good, thanks, Chris. Good
to see you. Excellent. You're a master of wine, and I would say one of the... This might sound a bit rude, but the workhorses of the wine critic world. You know, you're everywhere, but you're not a glory boy necessarily, like some of the people we see on TV a wee bit.
That's certainly not a glory boy, and I'm lucky. I've got lots and lots of different roles, some of which are higher profile than others, and I suppose the accumulation of all of them gives me a certain amount of visibility.
Yeah.
But not necessarily the glamour and the glory.
Yeah, you think about people like Oz or even Tim Apkin and all those guys now, and you see them a lot. You know, they're writing for, some of them used to write for newspapers or on TV, etc. You're really just in the background a lot, aren't you? Doing all sorts of stuff. I ran into you recently at the International Wine Challenge. You're one of the judge there or a panel judge?
I'm a panel chair there.
Panel chair, so you're like right at the very top of the judging at that competition. What else do you do, Richard?
Well, the judging's really important to me because that helps. It helps benchmark your palate each year, or calibrate your palate each year, I find. I do a lot of tasting, some of it blind, and although I don't do much writing, I leave that to the people who can write. I do write quite a lot of tasting notes, especially for Lidl, and in order to be able to write those accurately and assess wines accurately, judging at the IWC each year, well, it enables me to calibrate my palate and work out where I am, make sure that I'm in tune with everybody else and what people are tasting and how they're tasting at the moment. So the judging's very important.
I agree. I judge at the IWC. I judge a little bit at the I've only just started at the IWSC. And I love it when you're sitting in a room and you're talking about the wine and you're trying to understand why people like it or dislike it and things like that. It really helps you, especially when you get some faults coming in and things like that. It's fabulous.
It's really intriguing. And the one thing you learn is that it's really not easy. And also that people just don't agree.
Yeah.
There are times you'd have thought with wine faults particularly that, you know, it should be totally clear when a wine is faulty or not. But it's just not.
Yeah.
And quite often with wines, it's, you know, you have a panel who's absolutely determined that there is a fault in a wine, and yet it goes to the guys at the back who are assessing faults, and the wine will come back and they'll say, no, there's nothing, we don't see anything wrong with this.
Yeah.
And there's disagreement. And yet that you'd have thought that should be one area where it should be patently clear.
Well, yeah, but people have got threshold values.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. Different thresholds.
Yeah.
And so and that's why I think judging is really useful, because it, above all, it teaches you a certain amount of humility.
Yep.
And it teaches you to be sympathetic of other people's tastes and point of view, because there is no right and wrong.
Yeah, it's a bit mushy, that subject. How did you get into wine? Where did you come from?
I studied French. Yeah. Loved French, loved France, and because of that, probably started drinking wine a bit earlier than maybe I should have done. But always enjoyed it, and I just wanted a career that would enable me to use my French. I already liked wine, and I thought, why not? Let's give the wine trade a shot.
And where was that? Was that out of high school or university?
I started up in Manchester.
Yeah.
And I was working for a brewer up there, John Willie Lees. They had a wine arm called Willoughby's, and I started working there straight from university. Started out in a warehouse, spent 2 or 3 months working in a warehouse to understand how that side worked, and then was very fortunate to be given an opportunity to work as an assistant manager in a wine shop they had, and within a couple of years I was managing wine shops and just adored it. To be honest, I started off doing then what I still enjoy most, which is talking to people about wine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. But we're in London now, so you must have moved to London at some point.
I worked in Manchester for a couple of years, then I worked in Chester for about 8 years.
It's a nice little city, isn't it?
Chester's gorgeous, just lovely, beautiful place, and a fabulous place to be working in a wine shop. Really huge fun.
Yeah,
and
it's quite wealthy, Chester.
It's a very affluent area. Yeah, Cheshire and Chester.
You must have been dealing with quite nice wines.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It was a fantastic position. I loved that. And then I moved down south when I started working for Brown Brothers Australian Wines. Mm-hmm. And their office was in Suffolk initially, and then we moved it to Maidenhead, in fact. And so that brought me down here.
And you live in Maidenhead. Is that why you live in Maidenhead?
Because it was there? Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It just strikes me, if you can live close to your work, it makes it an awful lot easier.
Yeah. And Brown Brothers, they're still in the UK, aren't they?
Yeah, Brown Brothers still in the UK. They're distributed by Fells now. Yeah. And they're doing okay, although I think they'd like to be doing better. Yeah. For a company like Brown Brothers, the UK is a tough market because Brown Brothers are an awkward size. They're too big to be niche, but they're too small to be a really major player with the supermarkets. So it's tough for a company that size. It's not straightforward.
And they do have some weird wines. I mean, name the grape variety and they've probably got several different types of it.
Don't you just love it? Zibibo, Tarango, Sienna. I love it, and I still admire them hugely for following a totally different track to all other wine producers. And I think it's brilliant what they do. I still love it, and I'm always fascinated, and I smile each time I look at their range because it's so distinctive.
Yeah, and it's definitely an unusual range, particularly for an Australian producer, but who, they tend to follow particular varietals, so quite good. So you're in Brown Brothers. What were you doing at Brown Brothers?
I was managing their European office. So the office here looked after all their European markets, and it was a lovely job, to be honest, really at a really good time. So I was there during the 1990s when Australian wine couldn't put a foot wrong, really. The problem then was not selling wine, it was more allocating it. And every market was excited about what Australia could deliver. And because Brown Brothers wines were quite distinctive even then, the job was a relatively easy job. It was just managing the growth.
Yeah.
And it was a very, very exciting time for Australia.
Oh,
so,
cool.
So, yeah, it was a good time to be involved.
Okay, but now you're not with that side of the business. You're more on the...
So I left Brown Brothers to do my own thing, and that's what I still do now. And now it's my job is... It's almost impossible to define because I do little bits of everything. I judge. I do... My biggest client now is Lidl, who I write tasting notes for. And I do that in the UK, Germany, and Ireland, and that's become, as I say, the biggest part of my work now. But I still do a lot of work with Bordeaux, Burgundy, Champagne. I do talks. I do a certain amount of ambassadorial work. I do organise events in the UK for the producers I work for, and I take groups over to France as well. And then I also work with Santa Rita in South America, and I help them with events too. And occasionally take groups over there. So I've got a really varied mix. And then I also, the key thing from the teaching side is I run the wine side of the course at Leith School of Food and Wine.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm heavily involved with that as well.
They do WST courses
there.
Yep. So you're running the WST side?
We run WSET levels 1, 2, and 3 at Three Leiths.
Okay, lovely. Lovely. And that's in central London, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Yeah. Okay. How often do they run the courses there?
Wine is a key part of the diploma, the Leith's cookery diploma. It's mm-hmm. actually a cookery and wine diploma, and WSET level 2 is a part of that. And so generally January to May, they're pretty busy at Leith's. We're busy on the wine side.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's a good time of year. We're quite busy doing our courses at that time of year as well.
Exactly. It's a good time to do it.
Yeah.
As you said earlier, the New Year's resolutions.
Exactly. So you're talking about your events. What you're saying, you take groups over to various wineries as well. Is it like Abaster and Clark type of tours?
No, because my tours are... I do occasionally do tours for wine lovers, but most of the tours I do are for wine professionals. So for my clients in Bordeaux and Burgundy, who are producers, I'd take over groups of press journalists, wine journalists, sommeliers, potential customers. And I do quite a lot with Master of Wine students. So the trips I take over are fairly high-level education. So they're for people who know their stuff, and they're quite specialist wine tours.
Yeah, okay. So hence, you've got an MW, so you know, yeah, you can go into the detail that's required.
Exactly.
Oh, very good.
So we do that in Bordeaux, Burgundy, and occasionally Champagne. My job, to try and make sure I know more than they do.
So I imagine some budding in
I get away with it most of the time.
Yeah, I'm sure some students are pretty much onto it.
Students are fantastic. And I love spending time with Master of Wine students, because there's no question that in many areas their knowledge is superior to mine, and particularly tasting, particularly blind tasting. I mean, I'm in no doubt that the best wine tasters in the world are Master of Wine students, because that's when you're sharpest.
Yeah,
as
yeah,
an MW you've got student. To
be. One of the other things you guys do is you were telling me you did a public event in Birmingham.
Yes, this was an event called Love Wine, which a colleague and I organised a couple of weeks ago. First, a big wine event in Birmingham, and Birmingham is not known for its wine events.
Yeah.
And we were really pleased. We held it at Hotel du Vin, which is a decent venue in the centre of the city, and we got a good turnout on the day. It was just a one-day event. We had exhibitors, some of whom were national importers and agents, generic offices, but several of whom were local retailers as well. And then we had quite a lot of English wine involvement, different English vineyards too.
Oh, nice.
And it was just a really good day. We had good people coming through, fairly high calibre. People had fun, which is what you want at a wine festival. But it had fun, but within a controlled environment, let's say. It was just a really good day. We had love-ins, which was our name. For masterclasses, so a lot of people sat in on those in the course of the day as well, and it was good fun, and we were really pleased with the response. So I think we'll be doing it next year as well.
Okay, when will that be roughly? I presume
it'll be early November, possibly. Although we haven't set the dates yet or venue, but possibly the weekend of November 4th, 5th. I think the 4th is a Friday, probably, something like that. Okay. Or something like that.
Because Birmingham's weird. We were talking just before we started recording, and we run events throughout the country, but Birmingham, given it's England's number two city, is actually quite a relatively, you know, we run events here, but it's, given the population, I would have expected it to be a lot busier for us than some of, you know, we're probably busier in Sheffield and Leicester than we are in Birmingham, and they're small towns compared to Birmingham.
Yes, It is curious, and I can't necessarily account for that. I know from the work I've done in Birmingham that there's lots of interest in wine. There are several wine clubs and societies that meet there. The new wine shop, Loki Wine, has done really well, and as far as I know, they'd like to open another branch as well. And there's good wine merchants around Birmingham too. I feel that the wine scene is there, but it seems to be latent. I mean, we're rather hoping that Love Wine will bring it to the surface, and give wine in Birmingham more of a focus.
Yeah. Do you think it's because people aren't participating in the events, as people don't go to the events, or do you think there's just not that many people drinking wine up there, or?
I honestly can't say. I mean, no doubt that people are drinking wine, because you've got plenty of wine shops, and as far as I know, wine consumption in the West Midlands isn't noticeably lower than the rest of the country. So I think wine is being drunk. I don't honestly know. I wonder whether the way people socialise and the way people go out may be slightly different to the way it might be in London, but I've no reason to think that. Yeah. And certainly you've got plenty of affluent areas around Birmingham. I honestly don't know, and maybe we'll find out more as we progress with this.
Well, listeners, if you live in Birmingham and you know why there's not that much demand for wine events in Birmingham, do drop me an email. I'd like to know. You know my number by now. But yeah, no, I'd like to know myself.
And if you are wine lovers in Birmingham, then do make a note of Love Wine for 2016. Yep. There's a website, which is lovewinefest.co.uk.
Is it a very much a walk around style event? You know, you get a glass on entry and you walk around.
You get a Riedel glass when you go in. And you can wander around. We had about.
Do you get to keep the Riedel glass?
You do keep the Riedel
glass.
Oh,
that's a good one.
It's unbelievable value. We worked out that the value of the goodie bag is virtually the price of the ticket. So you get 30 tables of wines to taste for free, effectively. I think these wine events are really good value, but this one, it seemed to me, was particularly good value,
although I'm biased.
So the headline ticket price was £20. But there was, there were various offers, early bird offers and all that sort of thing. But the headline ticket price was £20. The goodie bag was worth, I think, about 14, including the glass. And then you got all these, the masterclasses were free, the love-ins.
Oh, really?
And it was just fantastic.
Oh, yeah. No, it does sound pretty good, actually. It does sound pretty good. And you're saying you had some local producers from England there?
Yep, we had lots of English wines there. We had, I'm going to get into trouble for missing some out now, but we had Three Choirs, we had Ridgeview, we had an English wine stand, including Biddenden. And as I say, I'm going to get into trouble now for forgetting some. But we did have a really good turnout. There were some nice English wines there.
Yeah.
And
I love Ridgeview. I think their wines are nice.
They do a fantastic job. They really do. And just lots of interesting producers. And then we had Brits who were making wine abroad. So we had a producer from Morgan. And then we had Gavin Quinney from Chateau Bauduc in Bordeaux. We had just lots of really interesting wines to taste. And then the local retailers, Edgemond, Nichols and Perks, Wine Emporium, people like that were also there. So it was, and Loki Wine, who I mentioned earlier. So it was really, we had a bit of everything and a huge number of wines to taste. I mean, I think there was certainly over 200 wines to taste if people wanted to.
Excellent. You've got quite a long view of the wine industry. It sounds like, well, I'm not sure how old you are now, but it's at least 30 years, I would guess. Don't take a...
Definitely true.
Okay. Yeah. Given the long history, you started out probably before the Aussie Revolution, you were right in the middle of the Aussies, sunshine in a bottle type of thing. But just focusing now on what's going on in the last 5 years or so, And thinking about sort of trends that have been building over the years, what do you think's going on that's changing now, big scheme things?
The big changes, I think, are in the way wine reaches the consumer. Those are the big changes in terms of how we buy wine. I think there's no question that the internet and people buying over the internet is changing the way wine can be sold. It's becoming much easier for niche producers and smaller producers to find a route to market. It's becoming much easier for people to enter the market as wine sellers without having to put the money into rent and rates and everything else that you need for a shop. So that's changing the way wine's sold. I'm saying this because it's what other people tell me, but I think it's true. I think Lidl and Aldi coming into the market is changing the wines being retailed as well, the way it's being retailed. The big four supermarkets in the UK are going to have to change the way they operate because of the growing sales of the so-called discounters. I think there's other sort of smaller trends in the UK. So you see retailers championing less known grape varieties and all that sort of thing. Yeah. But I think those are very small changes, and I think that's symptomatic of a vibrant, relatively dynamic market where there's quite a lot of wine involved drinkers, people who want to know more and who want to explore, and the retailers have to make sure that they're on their toes, that they've always got something new to talk about. So that's part of a dynamic market, but I don't think that's the major shift. And in terms of where we buy wines from, the changes are relatively small. And those may be shaped to a certain extent by the different routes to market in future. You've got an awful lot of smaller producers, particularly in Europe, and I think it's going to be very interesting in the years ahead to see how they manage the changing routes to market. Because I think they're going to need to.
Yeah.
I think business is going to become increasingly difficult for them unless they are able to harness the new technology and the new opportunities.
Do you think, because it's not that hard to put a website up and do that type of thing in retail. Some countries have embraced, you go to Australia, every Australian man and his dog's got a website, whether even if they only make half a bottle of grape juice. But some countries, they're not really there. France doesn't always come across to me as being particularly web savvy, but maybe it's
because it is true. It's amazing how many French wine producers still only seem to communicate by fax. You know, a lot of them don't even seem to have email still. It is, and I'm not saying that to be critical. But I think there's, you know, we sometimes forget that an awful lot of the European wine producers, they are effectively, well, they're farmers. In fact, you know, really, they're not salespeople. They're not marketeers. In the past, they've been able to sell wine in bulk direct to the local population. But that market is disappearing now. The French have been until recently drinking less wine, as have other European producing countries. And so if they want to survive, they've got to find other ways of marketing their wine now. And that's really difficult for them because it doesn't come naturally.
Yeah.
And that's why I think there's real opportunities there. And if I was younger in a different stage of my career, I would seriously be looking at smaller wine producers in Europe who don't have sales and marketing skills, and I would be trying to put together collections of smaller producers that I could sell direct, and I would find ways of consolidating their wines and selling their wines direct, but over the internet.
Okay,
because I think there's some really interesting prospects for that sort of business.
So do you think the quality of the wine's there, it's just they don't have the facilities?
Wine has never been better. I mean, Chris, you're far too young to know, but you know, when I first went round wine cellars in Europe, they were disgusting. You know, there were cobwebs everywhere. They smelt. They were dank. They were really not very nice places to spend half an hour or so.
Mm.
That's all. That for the most part, that's
I've been to
changed.
A few of those.
For the most part, that's changed. And the attention to detail, the attention to hygiene, the newer equipment, better training. Wine production has never been better. And even for small producers, they're much more consistent and higher quality than they used to be. So wine quality is great. The challenge is finding your market for your wines.
Yeah, it's like the age-old thing. You know, what I tell people in our business is, you know, running a wine tasting, easy. Getting the client in the first place, that's the hard bit.
Absolutely.
That's where the money is.
It is.
Excellent, Richard. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.